stuck in jail. The DA's trying to burn me. Be out on bail if I had a good attorney. Hello, beautiful humans. I'm Tymie Castle.
And I'm Benjamin Mead.
And you're listening to Just a Minute. Just a Minute is an educational podcast where we break down justice topics in 30 minutes or less. Today's topic, bail and pretrial detention. Hello, and thanks for joining us. Hello, Ben.
Well, hi, Tymie. Hi, everybody. So to start today, let me just call back to our jails versus prison episode.
It was long ago.
And it was a good one, I thought.
It was good.
We did we covered a whole lot in that.
Haven't gotten any feedback on that one, but
I liked it.
But, I liked it also.
Anyway, so we mentioned in that episode that we would do a bail / pretrial episode. So here we are. So we're going to do that today. And a lot of what we're going to talk about today, we did cover, or I did cover, in the jails versus prison episode.
Okay.
But I'm going to go into a little bit more detail about that today. So
don't tune out. Stay with us. Stay with us.
Yeah, consider this an expanded review of what I talked about.
An extension,
before.
If you will.
Yeah. And it was the bail. Was just like a short section of that episode. So we're going to go into more detail about that. I also mentioned in that episode from my spin that jail and bail rhyme. So let me ask you this. How many syllables does the word bail have?
Three.
If you're Appalachian like us, it definitely has bail. Nobody to go my bail. I'm down here locked up in the jail, honey, and now nobody will come pay my bail.
Although I would have to say that John Luca would also probably stretch that out. It's the Italian thing because he does long AI too.
Gotcha. I also mentioned Cocaine Blues in that, in my spin. It's an old murder ballad.
Yeah.
Johnny Cash performed that on his Live at Folsom Prison album.
Great
which
album.
I may have mentioned, So I was thinking about this, and I think that would probably be my one like desert island album.
Yeah. Okay.
What would be yours?
Like, I would not want to take anything to a desert island because whatever it is, I would hate it on like day 75. So
that's true.
I would hate anything. Just having to hear the same thing over and over to me would be torture. So I wouldn't have a desert island disc. No, not for me.
I don't mind consuming the same thing multiple times.
Oh, you would after like maybe 450 times listening to it, and it's the only thing you ever had to listen to?
Well, I don't know. I think it would be better than nothing.
You have seen that film with Tom Hanks, right? With the, what was it called?
Wilson.
Yes, with Wilson the volleyball.
I haven't
what was the name
it.
Of that film? Oh, okay.
Castaway.
Castaway, that's it. Watch it, and I guarantee you wouldn't want an album. Anyway, if it's going to be one, might as well be Folsom Prison Blues.
Yeah, for sure. All right, anyway, let's talk about the pretrial process, bond, bail, detention, etc.
Yes.
So the process starts when you are arrested or charged with a crime. And when you're arrested in Virginia, you go before a magistrate, or in other states you might go in court for an initial appearance. But the those processes accomplish the following tasks. First of all, the purpose is to review your charges, make sure that the police had a probable cause before you're arrested.
Right.
To appoint counsel if that is needed or necessary.
Yes.
And I just put the right to counsel on our episode list. So
Okay. Maybe
we'll do an episode, a whole episode on that in the future.
Okay.
And then number three is to have a bond hearing, which is what we're going to talk about today. So a bond is the written document that a judge or a magistrate would issue that releases someone from jail. And particularly entailed in that document is the agreement or the requirement for the released person to show back up.
Yeah, you got to come
back. Right, for sure. And we talked about it in the jail versus prison episode.
Yes,
You know, there are a number of ways that, this can happen, that bonds can happen. So a bond could be ROR, release on recognizance, and that is, you know, simply just on your scout's honor, you promise to come back to court. So you're released from jail and you just promise to show back up for court, and you don't have to do anything else.
Right.
And then there is a cash bond, which is specifically bail.
Yes.
So the word bail just specifically means like the cash dollar amount for a bond. So technically we should have called this episode bond pretrial. But anyway, tomato, bail, bond. So,
That's the point we're explaining it to people, right? Mm-hmm. Who don't know the difference. They don't know the difference. Yeah.
Right. So, bail is the dollar amount.
Right.
If you wanted
to
pay dollars cash to get out of jail, that would be the amount that you would pay. You can also have a property bond.
Yes.
So you could, instead of putting up cash, you could put up property, like, you know, put up the title to your car or the deed to your house. You also have the difference between a secured and an unsecured bond.
Yes.
And the difference there is that if you have an unsecured bond, you don't actually have to put the money up front to get out. So unsecured, let's say you know the judge sets a $10,000 bail, you don't actually have to pay that up front. You only have to pay that money if you don't show up for court.
Yes.
Okay. And then a secured bond is you do have to put that money up before you get out of jail.
Right.
And then if you show up for court, you get that money back.
Yes.
And then you can also do a surety bond, and that's where someone else posts your bond for you, particularly the bail bonds person to be. Gender neutral. So you can also have a surety bond, and that's where the someone else posts your bond, particularly the bail bonds person. And usually that, gender neutral language there.
Bonds person.
Although I'm going to definitely say the bail bondsman.
Yeah,
I know. I'm going to say it's, that. But up front, we'll just say bail bonds person.
Yes.
But usually you can find their offices right across the street from the jail or the courthouse. And that's the case right downtown. There's a bail bonds person right across the street from the jail downtown.
Just five steps from the front door.
So a bail bonds person is a private individual who puts up bonds for people in exchange for a fee.
Yes.
So again, let's say you've got a $10,000 bond. The bail bonds person might say, okay, you're in jail. You pay me 10% of that. You pay me $1,000 and I'll post your bond for you.
Yes, okay.
So you pay the bail bonds person $1,000. You don't get that money back, but you also don't have to post the full $10,000 bond. So you show up for court. The bail bonds person gets their $10,000 back, keeps your $1,000, and then makes money on posting bond.
I need to get into that racket, make some side cash.
Well, that's a possibility. That is a good hustle you get into, but you also have to take the risk of people not showing up.
And I'm not going to be like the bounty hunter and go find them or anything.
Right. Well, that's what happens. Yeah. So, you know, bail bonds person posts your bond and you don't show up for court. Then they, you owe them that money and they'll track you down. That's when they send Dog the Bounty Hunter after you.
They send somebody after you.
Yeah. Dog and Beth, did you watch Dog the Bounty Hunter?
I've seen a couple of episodes. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So,
It is funny because, like, if you watch that, he kind of like positions himself as like this public safety person. Like he's tracking down these dangerous fugitives for public safety. But really, all he's doing is trying to get money back for the bail bonds person.
Right, right.
Yeah, so he's not like a police officer or an agent of the law.
Yeah.
He's just a private bounty hunter. And I didn't know this until I taught my prison class, and one of the people in class asked me about this. But usually, like, if you go through a bail bonds person, you're obviously going to have to sign a contract with them about, like, I'm going to pay you this money back if I abscond. But also in those contracts, it's usually built in, like, it's not necessarily a waiver of rights because they're not government entities, but basically you give the bail bonds person permission to, like, search your house and come into your residence without approval to, like, track you down.
Oh, my
goodness.
So
basically before the, you know, a lot of these contracts will, like, you have to give permission for the bail bondsman to, like, come in, like, bust your door down, come into your house and track you down.
So when Dog's doing that, he's actually, it's, like, well within the contract that.
That you signed before you, before the bail bonds person would put up your bail.
Poor souls. Yep. Didn't know what they were.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I had never heard of that either, because he's talking about, like, the know, bounty hunter, the bail bonds person, like, busting his door down and coming into his house and dragging him out. And I'm like, I'll have to look into this. And it's like written into the contract. You agree to that before someone posts your bail. So anyway, that's a surety bond. And then, of course, you may be denied bond. And that's referred to as preventive detention. You don't even get a bail or bond bond if you're determined to be a risk to community safety or a flight risk.
Yes. Okay, so as we mentioned in the jail versus prison episode, the majority of people in jail are those who have been detained before their trial.
Right.
They're not convicted yet, but awaiting trial.
Yep.
In 2023, about 14% of people in jail were convicted of an offense.
Mm-hmm.
About 70% weren't convicted. The other bits are being held for transfer to other authorities. 70% of people being held, that's just a very high number.
Mm-hmm.
But I would note that comparatively, those are also very high. Like, if we look at other nations and what the percentage of people that they currently have in jail, in some countries, it's as high or even higher.
Interesting. Yeah, so you know, the majority of people in jail, as we mentioned before, are there awaiting trial. They haven't been convicted yet. And again, if you're in jail before trial, you either were denied release,
right,
preventive detention, or you can't afford your bond, you can't afford your bail. And that's the vast majority of those people. So it's, yes, not like all of these 70% of people are like super dangerous and they've been denied,
right, right,
bail or bond, but they're essentially too poor to pay the bond that was set for them.
Yes.
So 60% of defendants, people charged with the crime, and we're not just talking about those people in jail, but in general, 60% of defendants are detained because they can't afford bail.
Yeah.
A study in 2013 by the Bureau of Justice Statistics, a study of the 75 largest counties in the U.S. found that 96% of all felony defendants that were held pretrial had a monetary bail amount set.
Yeah.
They just couldn't afford,
yikes,
to post it.
Yeah.
The Prison Policy Initiative in 2024 has established that the median bail amount is about $10,000, and I've already used that,
yeah,
figure a number of times as,
yeah,
an example. But the median bail amount is $10,000, which is more than the annual income of the vast majority of those people who are locked,
right,
up in,
right,
prison.
Right.
But, yeah, even with smaller amounts, you know, poor people, which of course over policed,
yes,
over targeted, can't afford even smaller amounts,
yeah,
than that.
Well, okay, so it's pretty clear that most people in jail who are not convicted are in there because they can't afford to pay their bail. Why is that a problem?
Well, it's a problem for a lot of reasons, and I will list those out.
List, yeah, those.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You know, first of all, it's unjust. So we can,
yes,
think about this like philosophically or ethically,
right,
that bail is essentially freedom for a price. If you have,
yeah,
money, you can buy your freedom before trial. And the bail decision is the most overt place, the most explicit place in the criminal justice system,
yes,
where having money directly, explicitly benefits you. We've talked a lot about, you know, kind of like the over-policing of poor people,
right,
how, you know, the criminal justice system is, you know, specifically targets and over-punishes people without money, lower,
yeah,
socioeconomic statuses.
And then it's a revolving door, mm-hmm, you know,
yeah,
being jailed on low-level offenses and...
Yeah, you bail out, you,
yeah,
you know, don't show up for trial,
yeah,
you violate your probation, dirty pee test, pay fines,
right,
you can't pay your fines,
yeah,
charge more fines.
Yes.
Yeah. But, you know, other than fines, this is kind of like the most explicit place where money comes into play. You can buy your freedom before your trial if you have money.
Yes.
And we'll talk a little bit more about this when we get to bail reform later on.
Okay.
But one of the kind of arguments to protect the bail system is that it, you know, is a way to keep dangerous people off the streets, to keep dangerous people in jail before,
right,
a trial. And that logic sounds attractive, like bail,
yeah,
pay money, like, you know, keep dangerous people locked up and all,
yeah,
of us nice, sweet people safe. But really, that's not,
yes,
the reality of how it operates. Bail bond only keeps poor people,
right,
in jail.
Right.
There are lots of violent, dangerous people who are not held in jail before,
yes,
their trial because they can afford to post their bail.
Yeah, it's simply
out.
About whether you have, mm-hmm, the money to pay.
Right, right. Another problem is that, you know, certainly, you know, poor individuals are at a disadvantage, and,
yes,
racial and ethnic minorities are more likely to be detained before a trial.
Yes.
So, you know, as we've been talking about, naturally, a monetary system is going to disadvantage,
right,
people who don't have money to begin with.
Yes.
But also, as, you know, we both know,
yes,
and it's well documented that,
yes,
with most criminal justice decisions that, you know, people of color,
yes,
tend to have higher bail amount because,
right,
of bias and discrimination. So if you're black, you're more likely to be detained,
yes,
and more likely to have higher amounts of bail or bond set.
Yes, yes, yes.
Another, excuse me, another problem is that pretrial detention is also criminogenic, which we might have talked about that word on here before, but it's
I don't
one of
think
my
we
favorite.
Have.
Well, it's one of my favorite words. It's a fancy way, essentially, to say generating crime.
Generating crime.
Crime causing, yeah, like, yes, generation, genesis,
Yes.
Crime, criminogenic. So pretrial detention, keeping people in jail before trial, can actually make them more likely to commit crime, can increase right. their risk of committing crime in the future, because locking people up and keeping them in jail takes away those things that criminological theorists like to call social bonds.
And stakes in conformity.
Yeah, stakes in conformity. Those yeah. things that we have that keep yes. us out of trouble, like right. our family and our job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you are locked up in jail, odds are you're going to lose your job.
Yes.
You're going to become unemployed if you weren't already.
Right.
And that can be disruptive to your family ties and Absolutely. Family bonds.
Yeah.
So those are things that put people at greater risk of committing crime.
Right.
Also, people who are detained before trial are more likely to plead guilty.
Yes.
And we talked about this in our yeah. plea bargain episode.
Yes.
That it's bad and that it's yucky for pretrial detention
yeah.
to be used to coerce people to plead guilty. You're locked up. You can't afford your bail. Prosecutor comes yeah. to you and says, plead guilty and you can go home
okay.
today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who wouldn't?
I won out. Yeah.
Who wouldn't take that? Well, we talked about
We've
that.
We've already talked ago. About that, yeah.
See our plea bargain episode.
We're very low risk. We're risk averse.
Yeah, absolutely. And then finally, there is a penalty of pretrial detention.
Yes.
So, you know, studies have consistently found that people who are detained before trial, people who are locked up before trial, compared to those who are released, are more likely to be convicted,
yes.
more likely to be incarcerated,
yeah.
and more likely to be sentenced to longer periods of that, of time.
Right,
so,
right.
So why is that the case? Like, you know, all else being equal, you've got two people with committed the same crime, same criminal history. One gets bailed out, the other one doesn't. The one that gets bailed out is more likely to be found guilty, go to prison for a longer amount of time. Why is that the case?
Well, this is kind of a shout out to my spin, so I don't really want to show my cards yet.
Spoiler alarm.
Can I just like skip this and I'll answer that question in my spin.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, tune in to Tiny Spoon for her, for her response here.
Yeah.
But, you know, the two major reasons
yes.
that I will state,
yes, you state.
For that is because, you know, the stigma around pretrial yes. detention, and then, you know, people who are detained before trial who can't get, who can't afford to be bailed
right.
out.
You look guilty yeah. when you're in handcuffs before
for
the
sure.
court.
yeah. For sure. You can assist in your own your
yes.
own defense.
Yes.
So if you're locked up in jail, you don't have access to your lawyers,
yeah.
or at least you're at the mercy of your lawyers.
Right.
In there's a very notorious case that I'm sure you're aware of. Many of our listeners might know the Khalif Browder case. He was locked up, detained pretrial on Rikers Island in New York City for 3 years.
Yes.
And the charges were eventually dismissed.
Yes.
A lot of that time he was in solitary confinement.
Yeah.
And, you know, affected his mental health. He yep. eventually died by suicide.
Yeah.
You know, but essentially he was there for 3 years and his court appointed attorney never came to see him.
Yes.
One time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can't assist in your legal defense.
Right.
And then also you can't proactively do those things that might reduce your sentence if you were out of jail. So like
yeah.
if I'm out of jail, I might like proactively go to AA or
yes.
some kind of rehab
yes.
or like maybe go do community service and this will look good
yes.
For me in court. Like you obviously yeah. can't do that if you're in jail.
Right.
And then as you said, like the stigma, like
yeah.
you look guilty.
You look
if
guilty.
You are
yeah.
brought into court
yes.
in handcuffs.
Yeah.
So I taught a sentencing class
yeah.
Several years ago and it just so happened that like, you know, go to Orange Theory.
Yeah.
And the guy that was like on the treadmill beside of me was a judge. So he like got to chat.
Can't remember
like, oh my
that.
Gosh, you're
yeah.
like, you're a judge. Yeah.
yeah.
Can I bring my class to your courtroom?
Yeah.
So like,
yeah.
I took my class on a field trip to his courtroom for
yes.
sentencing day.
Yes.
And the way that it worked is that those people who were detained in jail who had court hearings,
yeah.
appointments that day, they were kept in like a cell
mm-hmm.
outside of the courtroom. So every time they were brought in, you heard like the loud
clink.
Electronic lock.
Yeah.
They were escorted in jumpsuits, in handcuffs,
yeah.
In shackles
yeah.
by a deputy. And, you know, then they had their hearing. And a lot
right.
of times it was for things like obviously probation violation
yes.
or, you know, not
yeah,
showing
yeah.
up for court, those small things.
Yeah.
And then you had people who were bailed out of jail, for their hearings, who were basically sitting in the gallery, like beside
yeah,
of us, who would
right.
stand up with their attorneys and go up to the, whatever you call it, I about said lectern or
podium,
pulpit, podium, whatever,
yeah.
You know, for your
yeah.
for your hearing. And even though in my mind I
yeah.
recognize that like one of the people who was bailed out of jail was like for a child porn case.
Yes.
And, you know, like in my mind, I recognize that's more serious than a probation violation.
Right.
It just psychologically feels different.
Yeah.
Gut instinct when somebody comes.
Yeah. You know, visually, they look like a criminal.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So lots of problems with bail and reasons why pretrial detention for monetary reasons is bad.
Yeah.
What's to be done about it?
Well, I think lots of things. So in my mind, I see this as one of the easier problems to actually fix.
Oh, we have an easy problem?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, as with everything, there's a lot of political resistance to it. But there are lots of ways to reduce the problems with bail. So, you know, first of all, when applicable, police can issue citations instead of arrests.
Imagine that.
Mm-hmm. And this was something that was done particularly with, like, marijuana and decriminalization. Yes. So it's still illegal, but decriminalization, you just got a ticket for it instead of being arrested and going to jail. Judges and magistrates can also consider a defendant's ability to pay. So we recognize that there is something called the Eighth Amendment, which, prohibits excessive bail amounts.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly if your bail is more than you make in a year, that is excessive. You can't afford that. So in bond hearing, judges and magistrates should consider the income of the defendant in setting bail amounts.
Right. We've talked about that before also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can also expand the use of release on recognizance and unsecured bond.
Yes.
So, you know, release on recognizance, there's not a money amount set. And unsecured, you don't put anything up to get out of jail. You just pay it if you don't show up.
Right.
So, you know, you don't have to pay money to
unless
get out of jail with an unsecured bond.
Yeah.
Right. And then finally, eliminate cash bond, cash bail. And we've seen lots of interest in lots of states and places recently implement bail reform. And basically how that works is that in most cases with these policies, bail is eliminated, cash bond is eliminated for those people charged with misdemeanors and nonviolent felonies.
Yeah.
So the default is if you're arrested, you're just released before your trial.
Yep.
And, you know, particularly with a lot of the crime and violence increases that kind of occurred around the pandemic, there was a lot of a political backlash against bail reform.
Yes.
So a lot of people were kind of politically saying, like, oh, this is because of, you know, bail reform. We're letting dangerous people out of jail. And because of that, a lot of states have pulled back on their bail reform and have added some of those, you know, like nonviolent felonies and misdemeanors back in to qualify.
Yeah.
So,
You
know, for political reasons, this has been kind of pulled back a little bit. And, maybe we'll do an episode on pandemic crime, but obviously that's kind of been like exaggerated and politicized quite a bit. But essentially the research shows that, bail reform is not a major public safety problem.
Nope.
Yeah. There aren't significant differences, for example, in homicide rates between cities that implemented bail reform and those that didn't.
Yes.
And, you know, to be most precise, that's really where we saw like the biggest spikes in crime pandemic, like the homicide problem.
It was homicide. Yeah.
And there weren't homicide differences between bail reform cities and non-bail reform cities. Studies have also shown no recidivism differences between those released and those held on bail, even using, you know, sophisticated methodologies like time series designs and other quasi-experimental. I mentioned that statistics in the previous episode. Anyway, so, you know, it's not like the homicide rates are different between cities. Recidivism rates between those released and those not released are not different.
Yeah.
And even you know, some of these, like, you know, articles and studies that I was reading for this that were pretty critical of or pretty defensive about bail. Like, I read this one.
Defensive about bail? Why?
Yeah, I know. I read this one. It was like a policy brief.
Yeah.
In like the authors of the article said something like, you know, despite the hysteria that critics engage in about the bail system, even though most people eventually end up posting their own bail, there's just like these hysterical critics. Anyway, like, so I read that and I was like, oh yeah, this is going to be one of those studies where it's like, you know, people who get bailed out on bail commit 10 million more crimes.
Sure.
But anyway, even in that study, it was like no major differences between recidivism rates of those bailed out versus those not bailed out.
Maybe, so, unfortunately for that researcher who was hoping to find.
I know. But, you know, contrary to what you might hear on certain news channels, the research is pretty clear that bail reform is not increasing crime rate.
Oh my gosh, it's almost like bail has nothing to do with causing crime.
It's crazy. It's just keeping the poor locked up before trial. Yeah. So no difference, basically.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's pretrial. You got anything else?
I do not.
Okay, well then that means it is our Minute to Spin It, where we have been eagerly anticipating
it's your only two
spoiler
lines.
Spin. So Tommy, tell us what your spin is in just two lines.
It's not really a spoiler because you already kind of mentioned it, but there are a lot of rap songs about bail, but there's only one king, that would be R.I.P. Tupac Shakur. Stuck in jail, the DA's trying to burn me. Be out on bail if I had a good attorney.
That's two
lines.
All
Did
right.
Did you get it?
Yeah.
It was like, two. Okay,
exactly. Ben. Well, you know, my spin for the jail versus prisons was country music, jail and bail, rap, jail and bail.
Yes. Like,
heck yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. What's your spin?
It is funny to realize all of the similarities between a lot of rap songs and old country music, although, you know.
Outlaws in both musical genres.
Right.
Okay, what's your spin?
Well, my spin is remember that bail only refers to cash dollars that you have to pay to get out of jail. More precisely, being released before a trial is called bond. James Bond. So who's your favorite James Bond?
Roger Moore, just because it's the 80s and I grew up in the 80s and those are the ones I saw and
Me
that stick in my head.
Me too. Like,
yeah.
I totally,
yeah.
Those are my favorite.
I mean,
Roger Moore,
Daniel Craig is pretty good. But
oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So what's your favorite Bond movie?
Oh God.
Do you know one?
Octopussy. I don't remember.
That's my favorite Bond movie title. That's definitely a Bond movie for sure. And Roger Moore is also in that one too.
Yeah, I don't know. Just like I had a brain fog moment where I could not remember the name of that Netflix documentary. Now I can't remember, like, Live and Let Die. Was that a Roger Moore?
Yeah, that was Roger Moore's first Bond movie.
Okay, then that sticks in my head. Yeah, that one.
And my next question was going to be like, I like a Casino Royale.
Oh, View to a Kill. That was Roger Moore.
Yep.
Yes.
And that was with Christopher Walken.
Yes.
He was the bad guy in that movie.
That was a good Walken impression.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
That was good. Yeah.
Yes. The Spy Who Loved Me. That was my favorite Roger Moore.
The Spy Who Loved Me. Yes. Yeah. I don't even think Octopussy was Roger Moore.
It was
Sean Connery.
No, it was. Octopussy was Roger Moore for sure.
Wow. These are
that
just like coming
back. That was the one
like
where he was like in a circus.
Yes.
Circus.
Yeah. Okay. We're children of the 80s. That's why, you know.
But then my next question was going to be, what's your favorite, do you have a favorite Bond theme song? But you already told mine.
Yeah.
Mine is Live and Let Die.
Yes.
Live and Let Die.
I think Duran Duran did View to a Kill. Do you remember that one? You can
that
sing
was,
that one too.
Yeah, that I know, I don't remember that.
Oh, okay.
But that was Roger Moore's last
Bond
movie.
That's right.
I think that had Grace Jones in it too.
Yes.
All right, well, anyway, to wrap things up, just a little Bond fandom. Anyway, cash bail is freedom for a price, and you shouldn't be able to buy justice. Despite political grumblings, bail reform, eliminating cash bail, especially for nonviolent offenses, seems like a good way to address the injustices of cash bail without increasing crime.
We are a community-driven podcast sponsored by the Gandhi Center and produced by JMU Libraries, Jenna Polk, and Zach Williams. We rely on generous support from donors like yourselves. If you would like to support our educational programming, click on the link in our show notes to provide a modest donation or just say hello.